Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. Hope you've had a good week. This week, I've got stacks of papers, lots of videos, lots of things to go through to get to the bottom of what is going on in the Ukraine. I'm confused because I see so many people listening to the media and their narrative with this as if it's true, when they never tell us the truth on any issue. That they always have an agenda behind the narrative, but somehow, oh, if we're at war or a country's at war, then we're getting the truth, and that's what's puzzling. But as I dug in to find out what is going on, what's all the details, it is hard to find because there's so much propaganda out there. But some of the things we're going to talk about, why is everyone pushing for war? The Democrats, the Republicans, why is that? Why is Nancy Pelosi so adamant that we fund this to the end, no matter what? She's been on the wrong side of every issue her entire career. She's never voted for any bill that we'd go, oh, that's a good one. And she's for this, but so are about half of the Republicans. What's going on? Why is the Ukraine our number one priority? That's what Mitch McConnell just recently said. With all the problems in our own country, over the last 12 months, 107,000 of our children have died in the last 12 months of fentanyl. Why is that? And then our border is still wide open with the fentanyl pouring in and the illegals. So much confusion. Our economy and the dollar is collapsing. And we're spending more money on the Ukraine, which is going to inflate our money even more and cause it to lose value. $58 billion so far. That's just so far. I think it's going to keep flowing because they've made this priority number one. Most families in America are struggling to pay the bills because of inflation and shortages. You know, there's no baby food on the shelves. And that's not a priority, though. And closing our border, that's not a priority. Millions more coming in that we have to support when we already can't pay our bills and we're collapsing. Why are we bragging about sinking Russian ships and targeting Russian generals and killing them? Why are we doing that? On one hand, we say Putin is a madman, but then we're not treating him like one. If he truly was a madman, and I don't believe he is, you don't poke a madman in the eye without expecting him to retaliate. But that's what they're doing. Someone that has 6,000 nuclear weapons, and they're just pushing and pushing and provoking. Why? Why do they want World War III? It's clear that they do. But anyway, we're not getting the real info about so much that's going on over there because it's all propaganda. And we're going to get into that and try to decipher between what the truth is and what the fiction is, because I think it's very important, not only for us, but for the Ukrainian people. They're the ones that are going to be given arms until the last one has died. This is going to kill off the Ukrainian people, our funding of the war. Oh, we're helping them. We're not helping them. We're allowing the war to continue on instead of coming up with a peaceful settlement. And every day that goes by, more of them are dying, and the war is going to keep escalating because we're giving them more weapons. And at some point, Putin probably will use tactical nukes to finish the game. And who does that hurt? The Ukrainian people. So it's not even about helping them. That's the lie. As you dig in, you go, wait a minute. Yeah, you know, and it's causing the Ukraine not to be able to plant their fields and harvest the food this year, which, because of that, millions worldwide will die over the next year. I guess the bottom line is, why are we refusing to work toward peace? But that's what we're going to talk about today. Thank you again for joining me. I appreciate it. I've been watching so many different videos and reading so many different commentaries on what is going on, looking for those that have wisdom, that have historical perspective, and that where the narrative they're talking makes sense with what we know in history. One of them I'm going to play for you right now. It's a clip by Harley Schlanger, and he understands the times. I appreciated so many of the different videos I watched by him, but he gets into how the bankers are behind this, which we should know that. They're always behind every war. Why are bankers behind every war? Because they give loans to both sides. So they win no matter what happens. And of course, whoever wins the battle, they have to pay off all the loans of the side that lost. And so they can't lose. So they love war because in war, everybody has to borrow more and more money because you can't fund that with all the normal things. But watch this clip here. I think he has some fundamental insight into some of the things going on behind the scenes.
Now, the question then is, what about the United States? We know in the United Kingdom, while there are people like George Galloway and others who are real exceptions, the political establishment in England is fully committed to this war because it's totally controlled by the banks and financial institutions of the City of London. The United States, same thing in terms of the Congress, in terms of both political parties, in terms of the institutions of government, the executive branch, and so on. Now, the problem in the U.S. is that the media is controlled by the same financial cartels and corporate cartels that run the war party. And so we have lies, censorship. This just dominates the U.S. airspace. Now, what are they protecting, though? They're protecting the Great Reset. They're protecting the Green New Deal. This is where big finance and the corporate cartels carry out a psychological warfare operation against the American people. The best example of this is the cover-up of the Nazis in Ukraine. This should be the biggest scandal that the United States government under Biden, the British government, the NATO countries are giving weapons to a regiment and several regiments of militia that pledge allegiance to the World War II Nazis of the Galician SS under Stefan Bandera. These were killers. These were genocidal maniacs who joined with the Waffen-SS to carry out the extermination of, quote, non-Ukrainian people. And they were instrumental in the Maidan coup. They were supported by Victoria Nuland, supported by Biden, who was the on-the-scene spokesman for the government for the Obama administration for the Ukraine coup in 2014. The neo-Nazis were crucial for that coup to succeed. They also were the ones who led the fighting against the ethnic Russians in Donbass, which resulted in at least 14,000 deaths, the vast majority of those deaths, Russian ethnic civilians. So why is this being covered up by the Western media? Well, Putin raised the issue repeatedly. He demanded that the support for these Nazis be stopped. But the Western war hawks deny that they're Nazis. Now they're praising them, praising the Azov regiment as valiant fighters for Ukraine. Now, there's a new embarrassment for the Zelensky government. You know, one of the covers for Zelensky is, well, how could there be Nazis supporting Zelensky because he's Jewish? Well, he just posted an Instagram photo of a Ukrainian soldier with the Nazi insignia of the Waffen-SS on his uniform. After it had been posted for several hours, it was taken down. But it was also posted on the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense. Nazi insignias on Ukrainian army uniforms today. And then they recognized they had to suppress that.
So a lot of that is information we're not getting. They're not telling us about, what's been going on to eliminate the Russian indigenous people there in eastern Ukraine by the Nazis. They're not talking about those. Here's another thing. This is by Colonel Black. And he is so well versed and understands these issues so well. I watched a couple interviews by him that were hours long, and they were so informative. But here's some clips of him talking about just the background information of things that were going on in Ukraine before this war started that our media didn't cover at all, but are significant to this conflict.
In 2014, Ukraine had gotten offers of assistance from the EU and from Russia, various financial aid packages that they desperately needed. President Yanukovych looked at this. He was the newly elected president of Ukraine. He decided that the Russian package was the more realistic, the more immediate help for Ukraine, and he chose to take that one. As soon as he made that decision, the Central Intelligence Agency and British MI6 went to work. They instigated an uprising within Kiev was called Kiev at the time, the capital of Ukraine. And with the help of CIA and MI6, it turned into a revolution, shooting, murdering various officials, police officers. And we managed, the U.S. and the U.K. managed to overthrow the government and stage a violent revolutionary coup. At that point, There are many Russian-speaking people in Ukraine, about a quarter of the people. They tend to be concentrated on the east near the Russian border. In two of these areas, what we call the Donbass, which is an area on the east of Ukraine, and it is adjacent to the Russian border, within that pocket of Russian-speaking people, they and also the Crimeans, who are virtually all Russian, they said, look, we don't recognize this revolutionary government. We didn't elect it. We didn't have any part to play in selecting who they were. And now, all of a sudden, you have these revolutionary thugs who are telling us that we're taking orders. And so both the Donbass and the Crimea broke away, and very quickly, Crimea was reabsorbed into Russia. It had been Russian for 500 years, and then the Donbass declared its independence, the Donetsk Republic and the Luhansk Republic. Both together make up the Donbass. What happened next is NATO, under the urging of the United States, began pouring weapons into the Ukraine. They began sending troops, putting boots on the ground, NATO boots on the ground, to train the Ukrainian revolutionary coup and their military, training them with Western weapons to kill Russians. And so then all the time this is going on, Russia is desperately trying to work with NATO, with the United States, to defuse the situation, because they can see that war is becoming closer and closer. Now, getting very recent, go back to December of 2021, just last year, just a few months ago, Russia made one last desperate attempt to achieve peace. They went so far as to lay out a detailed peace proposal that they submitted to NATO, and they said, look, this is our position. Let's talk. Let's negotiate this. Let's establish a peace for Eastern Europe so that, you know, Russia, Europe can get over this and work together. NATO was very dismissive. And when I say NATO, it's important to remember that essentially NATO is an agency of the United States. They don't really function with tremendous independence. And to some extent, you could almost look at the EU as kind of a vassal state of the United States. It had been this way. You know, Germany functions in some ways, I hate to say it, as a vassal state, because I love Germany. I love the people there. But the U.S. calls the shots, and the U.S. said, forget about this peace proposal. Now, as this is going on, meanwhile, President Zelensky has been installed by the U.S., by the CIA, by NATO, and he orders a huge army to assemble to attack the Donbass. 250,000 Ukrainian troops, their best, their most experienced, their most professional, they surround the Donbass, 250,000. And they're armed with the latest Western weapons, with Stinger missiles, with all sorts of anti-air and anti-tank missiles. And at this point, Russia, under President Putin, they know they're not prepared for a war. They're not prepared to attack. But they realize that at any moment, the Ukrainians are about to attack the Donbass. They've already fired about 2,000 artillery missions into the Donbass. This is from Ukraine into the Donbass. And now nowhere is this mentioned in the U.S. media. President Putin, he has delayed as long as he can. He realizes the attack is imminent. He attacks with 190,000 men. Now, this is important. There is a rule of thumb that throughout the military for hundreds of years, everybody knows when you are attacking, you would like to have a ratio of 3 attackers for every 1 defender. That's one of the most common military rules of thumb, 3-1. Putin is in the posture where he is forced to attack with less than 1-1. So this is not some huge pre-planned plot on the part of Russia. This is essentially a last-minute recognition. We've got to do something. This is our last chance to break up this assault on the Donbass. At that point, Russia crosses the border. It sends troops into Kiev, which ties them down. And at the same time, it begins to fight in the Donbass. The last thing in the world that Russia wanted to do was to fight this war. They did not want it, but NATO was hell-bent on it. They knew without question that if they continued pushing forward, if they attacked in the Donbass, Russia would be forced to fight. They knew Russia was going to fight, and they compelled them to fight.
That is key information that we haven't been told. We weren't told that 250,000 Ukrainian troops were attacking part of the Ukraine, the Russian part of it, before Putin ever sent troops in at all. When they're hiding information like that, and like I said, when we see Nancy Pelosi's and all the guys on our side all on the same page, you know something is going on. And what you're being told, you know for sure, is a lie. So you might not even know what the truth is, but you know whatever they're telling me is going on is not what's going on. Again, I've mentioned this in past episodes, but it's 100% valuable to remember. None of this would have happened if Biden would have said, Ukraine will never be part of NATO. We have to remember that. So it's all Biden's fault. It's all America's fault. It's not Putin's fault at all. And you know I'm as anti-communist as they come. He wanted something very reasonable. He said, I don't want nuclear weapons of NATO 5 feet from the Russian border, which makes total sense. Like we've brought up in the past, when the Soviet Union was going to put missiles on the island of Cuba, which is its own private nation, we said, no, you're not doing that, or we will attack. And so there is some territorial sovereignty that you have when you're a superpower. And so anyway, that was not respected. But again, it's purposeful. These things aren't accidents. So there's an agenda behind it. You know that when you see people doing things that don't make sense at all, then you realize, okay, they're up to something. But I was just shocked as I was studying that. I didn't know there was 250,000 Ukrainian soldiers that were gearing up and already had had 2,000 missile attacks into the Donbass region, which is the Russian part of the Ukraine, Russian-speaking people. That's significant, but of course not brought up in our media. And so you ask yourself, so then what is it about? Well, Colonel Black also has some key info on that that was very important that makes it start to make sense when you realize the money to be gained and the things that the globalists, the deep staters are going to be able to pillage if they're successful in doing what even our own Lindsey Graham said, we have to remove Putin from office. Watch this clip.
That if Putin's still standing after all this, then the world's going to be a very dark place. China's going to get the wrong signal, and we'll have a mess on our hands in Europe for decades to come. So let's take out Putin by helping Ukraine.
All right, so you're saying that that's how this ends, that Putin is removed? Is there any way?
There's no off-ramp.
There is no off-ramp.
No off-ramp.
Let's take out Putin. It's weird to see a guy live out his strange little fantasy life on TV live. Lindsey Graham won't come on this show. He's afraid. We could spend the next hour playing clips of Lindsey Graham going back 20 years making predictions that didn't come true and resulted only in the death of American servicemen and the impoverishment of the United States. He's gotten it wrong every single time, and he's still out there. Let's just take out Putin. Really, what would happen then? The country has 6,000 nuclear weapons. Would they be unsecured? You thought we had a mess on our hands when Saddam's arsenals fell into the hands of lunatics and extremists? What would happen to those 6,000 nuclear weapons if we just take out Putin? They don't even think about it. They don't care. They're high on their own supply.
So our side is saying there's no exit ramp. There's no peace. There's no alternative for Putin. Well, let me tell you, when you tell someone that has 6,000 nuclear weapons, we're not stopping until you're dead. He's going to use those things. He's not an idiot. It's like, well, you have nothing else to lose. Let him go. Take out Europe. Take out a couple major cities in America. At least have the fun of doing that if they're going to kill you anyway. Get your revenge ahead of time. But that's the idiots on our side that are provoking this instead of working toward peace, saying, no, we have 100 exit ramps for Putin. We want peace. We love the Ukrainian people. And we don't want more and more of them to die. But of course, they're not working toward any of that while they're acting like they're on the side of the Ukrainian people. But their actions show that they hate the Ukrainian people. Watch this clip on what they have to gain.
NATO is banking on the Russians not using nuclear weapons. And it's odd because on the one hand, we're saying, well, Putin's a madman. We always declare people madmen whenever they're on the other side of us. They have to be mad. I've watched Putin since the day he was elected. I've followed him closely. This man is as cool and calculating. He's extraordinarily intelligent. He is not somebody who is swept up by some emotional thing. We are banking on him being like Mr. Spock in Star Wars, the fellow who had no emotions but simply has this brilliant mind. The difference is that Putin is not Mr. Spock. He does have emotions, and he is very patriotic, and he will not oversee the dissolution and dismemberment of Russia, which I think is NATO's ultimate goal. I think they see enormous wealth in Russia, and I think they intend to seize that wealth, and they look at the fact that there can be just literally dozens and dozens of powerful politicians who can become trillionaires by taking over the lumber, the coal, all of these other resources. knowing the thought process. They did it in Syria, where they seized part of Syria, contrary to all international law. They took the part that grows all of their wheat and produces much of their oil, and basically just stole it. It was international larceny. I see no reason why they won't have a similar thought process when it comes to Russia.
So many facts have been left out. But another key thing is to understand U.S. strategy ever since Vietnam. And Colonel Black explains that, where then you start to realize, oh, really what's going on is we're using the Ukrainian people to fight a proxy war for us against Russia, so they have to die and we don't. But we've done this many times in the past. Listen to this clip here. It's so powerful of what our evil State Department has done to make it look like we're not fighting wars, all the while we're funding them and training people and encouraging death and destruction worldwide.
You know, when we came out of Vietnam, we had 60,000 people killed. It was a very, very bloody war. I myself have dragged dozens of bodies off the battlefield. We recognize that was perhaps not the most efficient way to fight wars. The Soviet Union had moved into Afghanistan, and rather than put American troops on the ground, we raised up a terrorist army. We brought in Saudi Arabian clerics to establish madrasas, which were a large system of religious schools. And they brought in street urchins, orphans, people like that. And they trained them in nothing but how to kill people and studying the 7th century version of the Quran. It was this Wahhabism, a certain sect of Islam that was extraordinarily violent and hate-filled, and the idea was to train these young people to so hate any Christian that they would go out and slaughter them, and they did with the Russians. It was a very bloody war for Russia. In the end, the Central Intelligence Agency was fielding a terrorist army of 300,000 members, largest terrorist army in modern history. When it was over, they sent a message from Afghanistan to CIA and back. It was some cryptic comment to the extent, "We did it." And I think at that point, they began to recognize that it is much better to have proxies fight than to get the American people to agree to fight these wars. So we have done that repeatedly. We did it throughout much of the Middle East, although we've also put troops on the ground. We are using the Ukrainians for the time being as proxies, but I think there is now a movement, and this goes back to what Harley was saying. We potentially face an economic cataclysm in the United States. We have printed such vast quantities of unbacked currency that inflation is inevitable. We're seeing it now. But what we're seeing, we're just seeing our toe dipped into the water. We're about to, you know, to go into the pool, and we're going to see inflation that will make us long for the days of Jimmy Carter. And I think to some extent, there's an element within the Democratic Party, since they're in power today, that would say that here's a chance to wag the dog. They did it successfully when they attacked Serbia. When the U.S. attacked Serbia on the eve of the Bill Clinton impeachment trial in the Senate, where we attacked Serbia to their utter amazement, because they had been longtime allies of the U.S. And suddenly we had jets dropping bombs from the sky. So I think there is an element within the Democratic Party that says we are faced with the worst election imaginable in November. Perhaps there's a chance if we can distract the American people by talk of war and mobilization and all of the hysteria and excitement that goes with war, maybe we can divert their attention.
So that is one of the reasons that we keep funding this thing. It's we're allowing the Ukrainians to die for us in weakening Russia, which is crazy and it's evil. But also, the Democrats know they are in trouble with these midterms. And so they also know, the bankers know, the inflation is getting ready to go off the charts because they've overprinted the dollar and there's getting ready to be collapse. So they're going to use the war to accomplish many of their long-term globalist goals.
Well, I think this is where you have to look at the people, the Davos crowd, which includes people like Prince Charles in England, bankers such as Mark Carney, the former head of the Bank of England, the European Union leadership, who are not really from parties that represent people, but they represent bankers.
That's right.
Similar to what we have in the U.S. Congress. Now, the problem they have is a financial system that's collapsing. So from Davos and Klaus Schwab, they came up with this idea of the Great Reset. Now, what is the Great Reset? It's that you have bankers who determine the policy for every nation, that nations are not allowed to make sovereign decisions on how to invest money. And this was done for many, many years to the poorer countries, the former colonial countries, through the International Monetary Fund. They were told they had to shut down plans for infrastructure, for education, for transportation, and spend money to pay the debt. And so now what's happening is that the Europeans and the Americans are being told the same thing. You can't invest in the physical economy. What's the excuse? Global warming. That if we have infrastructure, if we have modern technologies, it will heat the planet and we'll all die. Now, the science on this is quite fraudulent because I just was reading an article that there's global warming going on Jupiter right now, which doesn't have a single automobile or factory. This has to do with other aspects, solar radiation, the solar system where it is in the rest of the cosmos. But they're using this to impose a top-down global government in which no nation is entitled to be a sovereign nation. And the argument they have is that the central banks today determine credit and currency policy, but you have legislatures that determine spending or fiscal policy. They want to take that power away from legislatures because they say parliaments, Congress are too close to constituents and don't recognize the needs of the bankers and the financial institutions. So that's what the Great Reset is. Now, here's the point. In the United States and Europe, most of the population, not knowing this, seems to be willing to go along with it. There is a lot of opposition, but not open. But the Russians and the Chinese, and now we see also the Indians, the Egyptians, the Brazilians, the Argentines, the South Africans, they're not willing to give up sovereignty. And they're asserting their rights to play a role in determining what the policy should be. And so this is where war comes in. For example, Iraq and Libya, both of them had ideas, Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi, of gold-backed currencies and moving toward backing those currencies also by oil. And they were easy to crush militarily. It's a lot harder to crush Russia and China. But the attempt of going after Russia is to say to every country in the world, look, we'll do whatever it takes to make this new order with no sovereign nation states a reality. And so I would argue that, and that's what the Schiller Institute has been saying, that's a major impetus behind the desire to break Putin and carry out a regime change in Russia the same way they did in Libya, in Iraq, and in Ukraine. Remember, in Syria, they tried to do a regime change, and Putin came in and stopped it at great expense to the Syrian people, not from Putin, but from the U.S. support of the terrorists. So what we're seeing now is a realignment starting to come into being.
Our State Department, with the bankers, with the intelligence community, all are working together with the globalists for the Great Reset. And so everything and anything that they can use to work toward that, they will do. And so that's what this Ukrainian war is all about. It has nothing to do about freedom for the Ukrainians. It has nothing to do with any of the things that they're telling us it's about, in picking and provoking this war with Russia when the economies of the world have already been suffering because of the last 2 years of the shutdowns and all the nonsense with COVID. When Russia is so vital to the world, listen to all the things they export every year.
We repeatedly hear President Putin criticize that somehow he's caused all of this inflation. Now, monetary policy causes inflation. You print too much money, you get inflation. Cut and dry, you spend, government spends too much money, you get inflation. But it is remarkable to say, well, Putin attacked Ukraine and caused inflation. He did not cause any inflation whatsoever. What has helped to accelerate inflation quite dramatically is that the U.S. placed sanctions, and there's this sort of knee-jerk reaction to sanction this one, that one. Anybody that you don't like for the moment, you place economic sanctions. But look what it's done. We've tried to cut off all Russian exports, and we've had some considerable success. But just listen to what we get, and I say we, but principally the Western world, the civilized world, gets from Russia. They're the second biggest exporter of oil. They are the world's largest exporter of natural gas, the second largest exporter of aluminum. Russia is the world's largest exporter of fertilizer, which will determine the amount of food that is available in the next year or two. World largest exporter of lumber, third largest exporter of coal, fifth largest of iron and steel. Anyway, the list goes on and on. But these are products, resources, commodities that are essential to the foundation of civilization. If you cut them off, you cut off the largest exporter in the world, you will dislocate your economy like nothing you could possibly do. So now here we've got the Ukraine, which is of little practical importance to the United States, not an ally, it's not part of NATO, and yet we're risking World War III and an acceleration of the economic collapse for absolutely nothing of consequence to America.
So we are risking everything for the Ukraine when, again, in the bottom line, it's just costing them lives. We could have worked for a peaceful settlement easily, by just doing what I've talked about before. But the ultimate goal in this, and I hadn't heard anyone else talk about this, is for the bankers and the globalists to be able to seize all the vast wealth and assets of Russia. That's why they want to remove Putin from power. They don't care if those nuclear weapons go to every radical terrorist group in the world. They could care less. They want the wealth of Russia. And as you just heard from his description, the natural resources they have are incredible.
I don't think the people who are pushing this think that it'll go to nuclear war. There's a certain arrogance in the unipolar mentality. You see it with Tony Blinken. You see it with Victoria Nuland, that we can do whatever we want, and we have been doing it, and nations will go along with us. They'll submit to this order. The difference is that Russia is a nuclear power. Russia is a nation with a long history and tradition and a culture, similarly with China. And we see that the German population is willing to submit. There's some resistance in France. The British population goes along with whatever is coming out of Whitehall and the city. But other countries aren't. And the arrogance that as a unipolar power has them deluded to believe that every nation will end up submitting. And that's the danger. A nuclear war could occur because of an accident. Because once you have two nuclear powers in a war, that's the threat.
Nuclear war, as long as they survive it, they don't really care. It accomplishes so many of their goals. Cuts world population, which is their number one goal. It creates fear, which is always one of their top goals. It also causes the whole world to come under their submission and be willing to accept world government. Because if we literally had to live through a nuclear war where we lost 25% or more of the world's population, those that were still living would say, yeah, world government's fine, whatever. We just don't want any more war. And that's what they did in World War I, World War II, hoping those were bloody enough to accept world government, but they weren't. But their own writings have said World War III will be the thing that ushers in world government. So all these different things are going on, and it's boiling up toward a potential world war. And our Congress and those that represent us are so sidetracked with stuff going on over there instead of here and aren't caring about our own country. When we see that kind of contradiction in complete, just it's like they are repulsed by the American people, our leaders. Something is going on. I think the bottom line is you realize our enemies have taken over our country, as I've talked about in the agenda movies. But most of our congressional people and senators and all of the deep state people, they hate America. And they hope at some point it does collapse and come down. They just want to be in power of whatever's next when that happens. But it's kind of hard to comprehend. But as of this week, $58 billion have gone to the Ukraine that we, of course, have had to print because we're bankrupt. And so that's going to make the inflation even worse. The sanctions against Russia are going to make just prices just keep skyrocketing in every area. And the whole world is going to suffer and millions are going to die. That is a fact. You will see over the next 2 years or less, millions, tens of millions will die worldwide because of these sanctions, because of this war and the farms not being able to grow the wheat that they normally do. And again, the globalists, our Congress, our president, administration, they could care less. They're not thinking about us as a people. They're not thinking about the people of the world. And it's kind of shocking. Here's a clip from Tucker, him talking about some of these issues that are so important and we need to be aware of and educate others about, because we need to remove every single member of Congress and of the U.S. Senate. The next election, they're up for re-election. There's, of the 535 members of the Senate and the House, there's not 10 good ones. There's not 10. So that means yours is no good. Well, I think he's pretty good. No, he's no good. Or she's no good. It's just a handful that are out of 535. They've all been bought and paid for by the lobbyists, which the deep state and the bankers and the globalists all control the lobbyists so they can do whatever they want with our country. But that's where we are. But watch this clip here and then I'll wrap up.
As usual, Democrats, as ludicrous as this may sound, are united on this point. They stand as one. But also as usual, a sustained propaganda campaign in the American media has managed to divide the Republican Party. Now, why does this happen every single time? Here's why. because Republican office holders, no matter how conservative they tell you they are, believe the New York Times. They care deeply what legacy media say. They read the New York Times every day. They don't want to be criticized by the New York Times. And that's how the left controls them every single time. If you don't believe it, think back the last 2 years. You saw the same dynamic in the early days of both the BLM riots and the COVID lockdowns. Nancy Pelosi was out there first taking the most extreme possible position. And then a lot of Republican leaders agreed with her. Do you remember that? 2 years ago this month, Nikki Haley, former governor of South Carolina, running for president, she's conservative. She told Americans in the first days of the riots that they deserved to suffer after George Floyd died. Quote, "In order to heal, it needs to be personal and painful for everyone," she wrote. And in the end, it was personal and painful. A lot of people died. And that was good, because your racism killed George Floyd. That was Nikki Haley's first reaction. She read it in the New York Times, and she believed that they all do. So it shouldn't shock you that Nikki Haley's first reaction to the Russia invasion, and Mitch McConnell's first reaction too, and the first reaction of so many other Republican leaders, was that protecting Ukraine is way more important than protecting you, than protecting America. And Mitch McConnell hasn't, to his credit, moved from that. He still thinks it. Here he was yesterday.
I think we all agree the most important thing going on in the world right now is the war in Ukraine. I had a chance to call the president last week and request that the Ukraine package move by itself and quickly. He said, let me think it over. He called back in about 15 minutes and agreed that we need to do this Ukraine only. And quickly, I think we're on the path to getting that done.
You got to hope that there's some sincere billionaire out there who's going to fund a primary challenge against every single one of those Republican senators standing behind Mitch McConnell. As he said, and we'll quote again, "I think we all agree the most important thing going on in the world right now is the war in Ukraine." No, the most important thing going on in the world right now is the state of your country, the one you're supposed to run. The people you're supposed to represent, whose lives you're supposed to care about, the ones who can't buy food or gas, the people ODing on fentanyl. 107,000 in a year, dead young people, Americans. But that's nothing compared to Ukraine. We all agree Ukraine is the most important thing. Really, if you agree with that, you should not be sitting in the United States Senate as a Republican.
Our own government is clearly against us, and we've known that. And it's kind of sobering to think about when you realize everything they're doing at every level is going to impoverish us and going to hurt us, going to make us weaker as a country. But that's where we are. And so we, again, need to not let that consume all of our energies, but instead be doing the things we can do, like our action items below. Be working on those things. Be in prayer about these things, that God will step in and God will expose the deeds of the evil and the plans of those that are trying to destroy instead of giving life. And so it's just, you know, this is kind of a sobering episode, but it's everything we've been told is a lie. And it's never the way we think it is. And that's why it's important to dig in and find out the truth, because we want to make sure that's what we're presenting. But our verse for this week is Psalm 18:2, and this is a good one on days like these when it seems like everything's against us. Psalm 18:2, "The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my strength, in whom I will trust, my buckler, the horn of my salvation, and my high tower." It's King David when his enemies were coming against him going, he's overwhelmed, but he's reminded, no. "The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my strength, in whom I will trust, my buckler and the horn of my salvation and my high tower." He's our place of safety. Do you know what a buckler is? It's a shield. A lot of people know that, but it's a shield that goes from here all the way to the ground. What does that mean? It means when you hide behind it and you duck behind it, you're completely covered. There's no part of your body that is vulnerable to attack. Well, that's what God is to us. So be strong in the Lord, be faithful, be prayerful, and do what you can do to cheerfully influence others with the truth. And until next week, God bless you.